Okay, we're going to go on to case number two, and that case is 22-1239, Stephen Kalin versus the Village of Gurnee. Good morning, Ms. Gilbert.
Good morning. I'm Gigi Gilbert on behalf of the plaintiffs, the Kalins. The Kalins had a very different version of the facts leading up to the shooting death of their beloved pet, Timber, back in July of 2019. Under the Kalins' version of the facts, Timber was a 50-pound German mix, short-haired pointer and lab. When defendant Greer rang the doorbell, Timber walked slowly 30 to 40 feet to the front door to see who was there. Timber was not growling or barking. It was defendant Greer who threw up his hands and said, "Oh shoot, you have a dog," and asked Kim to put the dog away. Kim complied, bent down, and had her hand by Timber's collar. It was defendant's behavior in suddenly turning and running through a flower bed that caused Timber to follow the dog. Timber only ran because defendant Greer ran. If defendant Greer would have stood his ground, Kim would have had him by the collar. The Kalins all testified that Timber never jumped at Greer in an attempt to bite him or nip at him. Timber never actually touched Greer or growled at him.
Ms. Gilbert, forgive me. To what video evidence do you think the court is referring on page 9 of the opinion when it says, quote, "But the body-worn camera disputes their allegation of Timber's playfulness with Greer, and that evidence governs here"?
Okay, Your Honor, that's exactly why I think the district court abused its discretion in finding that plaintiff's facts should be deemed admitted because the video evidence contradicted their version. The video evidence here was vague at best. I mean, there was only one body-worn camera, that of defendant Greer's. Defendant Greer didn't even activate the body-worn camera in a timely manner before approaching the Greer's residence. He was disciplined for this. He received a written reprimand for not activating, and his failure to activate caused there to be no audio of the events leading up to the shooting.
It seems, though, that the video evidence, Ms. Gilbert, was the district court limited its ruling based on the video evidence simply to whether or not Timber was playful, not to the entire sequence of events.
Your
Honor,
do you
agree with that?
No, I don't agree with that. Because defendant Greer turned and ran through the flower bed, the video camera
do
was
you,
on his...
And maybe my question wasn't a good question. Do you agree that that's what the district court judge used the video evidence for? Not do you agree that that's what it depicts, but do you agree that the district court limited its ruling based on the video just to the playfulness of Timber?
I don't agree with that. I actually think that the district court used the video and abused its discretion and discredited all of the plaintiff's material facts that we included in the body of our response, which was a case management procedure that the district court wanted us to do. We submit in violation of local rule 56.1.
What in the court's opinion makes you come to that conclusion? Because it does seem that the language that Judge Rovner just pointed out is the one place that the court specifically made a factual finding based on the video. And I don't see it anywhere else.
Well, Your Honor, respectfully, I don't think that the video shows that the dog wasn't playful. The video is...
Again, that's a separate question. I'm trying to figure out what your argument is that you used the video evidence for. And it seemed to me that it's just the playfulness. That may not be an accurate conclusion from it, but that's a separate question from did she use... Are you arguing that the district court improperly used the video evidence to make other determinations? And if so, what's your basis for that?
Yes, we are arguing that the district court used Scott v. Harris and the body-worn camera video evidence in this case to discount and discredit every single fact that the plaintiffs cited in their response brief. We had all the facts there. The Kalins said that Timber was not barking or growling. They said that it was Greer's behavior that caused the dog to go outside and chase him because it was Greer's running suddenly.
But is the court relying on the video for that or on the defendant's statements of fact?
Well, I mean, I believe it was a combination, and both combinations were an abuse of discretion. So there was not one fact that we cited in our response to, which was the way the district court wanted it. We put them right there in the response, and there was not one of the material facts that we listed that the district court had in its opinion. She credited the defense with each and every fact. She used the video. We submit an abuse of discretion where the video had no audio, was unclear because he was running, didn't show the shooting itself, and didn't show the events leading up to the deadly, lethal use of force, killing the dog in front of the family.
If we add into this whole mix the video footage of the neighbor who disputed that Timber was not trying to bite Officer Greer, what would you say?
Well, Your Honor, I believe that the statement of Janet McBerry was hearsay. The move-in didn't
you didn't put a hearsay objection in the district court, however, did you?
Well, the way it came in, the way it came in, they just put in the whole video. They said the neighbor saw this, right? We said I thought that was hearsay, and the problem with it was it wasn't under oath. It wasn't a declaration.
Did you raise a hearsay objection in the district court to the neighbor's statement?
I believed we did.
Where?
Okay, well.
Where do I find that?
Then if we didn't, I would submit to you that it was hearsay, and there's two sides to every story. The neighbor.
Counsel, look, you've got good arguments. A waived hearsay objection is not one of them. Let me ask you if I could to address.
Could I just add something?
Go ahead.
Sorry. But could that not have been a present sense impression?
Sure, that's possible, but there's two sides to every story. And the problem here is the district court credited just the defendant's side when they should have, on summary judgment, given every inference to the plaintiff's version of events. So even if Janet comes in under present sense or a hearsay exception, okay, I'll live with that. That's fine. But you have Kim, Steve, and their daughter saying different things. Their daughter views it from the window and says that Timber, her beloved pet, was just being friendly. He wasn't doing anything wrong when Greer shot it. The way summary judgment works, that's nice that Janet has a different version, and that might come in at trial or as an excited utterance under a hearsay exception. But here, we're at summary judgment. There's two sides, and plaintiff's side, and all reasonable inferences from their version of events must be taken as true. And here, we have such, you know, we have two different sides of the facts leading up to the shooting, lethal force, illegal seizure of timber, and plaintiff's version must be credited, and that's why it was a mistake.
Were Stephen Kalin's statements to Officer Mann hearsay?
I'm sorry, I didn't hear the question.
I'm wondering if Stephen Kalin's statements to Officer Mann, were they hearsay? You know, where he said, you know, you did the right thing, 100% correct, whatever.
Sure, they're hearsay, and they could come in as an admission of a party opponent, and I'm sure that if this matter gets to trial, defense counsel will use every one of those video statements to impeach Steve Kalin's testimony at trial.
Didn't Officer Greer say at the time, "I didn't mean to"? I thought I heard him say that on the video.
That he didn't mean to shoot I heard him say, I shot your dog, okay. Repeatedly, right. And he admitted that he shot at the dog because everybody was confused what exactly happened.
Ms. Gilbert, could I focus you on this issue of the district judge's standing order on summary judgment and footnote 2 of the district court's opinion, which addresses that point. First of all, do you see any conflict between the judge's standing order and either Civil Rule 56 or District Court Local Rule 56.1?
Yes, Your Honor. I see a major conflict between the district court's standing order and Local Rule 56.1. The district court, in bold letters, states that the parties a joint statement of undisputed facts, the parties may not file and the court will not consider separate statements of undisputed facts. Local Rule 56.1A2 says the moving party shall serve and attach a statement of material facts. Local Rule 56.1B2 says the opposing party must serve and file a response to the statement of material facts. And then the court's case management procedures says the non-moving party must include material facts in its response to the motion for summary judgment that it contends are disputed in order to demonstrate that a genuine issue of material fact exists that warrants denying the motion for summary judgment. In complete contrast. Okay,
I take it your position is that you complied with the National Rule 56 and the district court, the Northern District 56.1, correct? And you also, if I remember correctly, submitted your response and objections to the defendant's proposed statement, but it's just that opposing counsel thought it was too late and then told the district court that you had not cooperated.
Exactly, Your Honor, exactly. She told...
Is it your position that it is compliance with the standing order to submit your statement to the defendant's counsel 5 hours before the close of business, 1 business day before the joint statement would have been due?
Well, Your Honor, okay, if the district court said that I was untimely, that might have been a better argument. But here the district court said I failed to participate at all. That's what opposing counsel had told the court, that I failed to file any substantive.
Does the standing order have any time limits?
It has no time limits. It says prior to filing a motion for summary judgment.
It does have a procedure you can follow, though, if... It does have a procedure. You could go in and file a joint motion if you can't agree on the proposed statement of facts.
In retrospect, knowing what I know now, I should have asked opposing counsel. We're getting down to the wire here. They had completely ignored the procedure, completely not even trying to get a joint statement, and their pleading was simply struck, and they were allowed to replead.
It seems almost as if the district court overlooked that statement from the defendants that you had submitted, that they had misspoken in their brief when they said you didn't send something. It seemed like the court may have overlooked that.
I don't think the court overlooked it, because in the decision of the district court, it said that I failed to comply with the case management procedure.
Which is what they had represented in their original motion, but then clarified in the reply. And it doesn't seem like the court necessarily appreciated that.
Right, exactly. The court looked at the initial opening brief on summary judgment, where opposing counsel misrepresented to the court in bold face caption that I didn't file any response to the joint statement. That simply wasn't a true statement. And then in the reply brief, they tried to backpedal and say, oh, we were mistaken. You know, she did, but it wasn't timely. That was completely ignored by the district court. She found and held in a published opinion that I did not comply at all, which just wasn't the truth. The record doesn't support that. And I'm going to reserve rebuttal. Thanks.
Okay. All right. Mr. Kushawa.
Good morning, Your Honors.
Good morning.
Michael Kujawa on behalf of the defendants, appellees, Village of Gurnee and Officer Delonte Greer. We would ask that this court affirm Judge Ellis's grant of summary judgment in this case for a number of reasons. First, Judge Ellis's standing orders on summary judgment do not conflict with either local district rules or the—
Mr. Kujawa, I want to start with the question that I asked Ms. Gilbert at the end. You have, it seems like, conceded that your representation in your motion for summary judgment that plaintiff's counsel had not complied or had not made a substantive response was not accurate. Do you agree with that?
I do agree with that. That was not accurate.
Okay. And then you tried to clarify that she was late. She sent it way past when she should have in order to incorporate it. But what in the district court's opinion makes it clear that the court appreciated that? Because it seems to me from footnote 2, which is kind of a standard footnote that the court uses when there isn't compliance with her standing order, that she may not have appreciated that there was a separate statement of fact sent to you. It was untimely, which is a separate issue, but that there was a separate statement sent to you.
I don't know that I can point to a line in the opinion that says that this is what I did in Judge Ellis's opinion. But I do think that the court pointed out multiple times in the opinion that she had reviewed the record in the case and that she had considered the factual allegations or statements of undisputed fact that plaintiff had put into their—
But how can we tell which ones? Because if that's the case, I'm not sure how you could decide as a matter of law the issue here. Assuming the court considered everything that Ms. Gilbert put in her statement of facts and viewed that in the light most favorable to the plaintiff, how could this be resolved at summary judgment?
Because as Judge Ellis said in her opinion, any questions of fact that were raised by the facts alleged by the plaintiff in their brief are not fatal to the motion for summary judgment. Really, what it boiled down to was the distinction between what is seen on the video, which utterly discredits the allegations of fact.
I've looked at that several times. I don't see that. What's discredited?
The idea that the dog was playful, the idea that the dog did not chase Officer Greer.
The dog clearly followed running. Greer ran, the dog ran. That much I'll concede is undisputed, but everything else about Officer Greer's version is disputed by the plaintiffs and is not refuted by the video.
Well,
is not proven by the video.
Well, I think what Judge Ellis was relying on was the fact that the statements, the testimony given by the Kalins after the fact about what had taken place was discredited by what is seen on the video.
I know she said that.
Yes.
I've watched the video. I don't see how you reach that conclusion.
And is it clear the court even said that? Because it seems like the court used the video for a very limited purpose.
I think the court used the video for the playfulness, but I think the court also referenced multiple times the statements by the Kalins, which are completely contradictory to what their testimony was later on. The fact that Officer Greer did everything right, that they would have done
right.
Exactly.
Didn't what Officer Greer, though, say he hadn't meant to shoot? He expressed regret?
Oh, I think he felt bad that he had to shoot the dog, but I don't believe I don't think Officer Greer has ever said that he didn't feel it was necessary to shoot the dog or that he had any other option available.
Well, maybe I misheard on the video. So, okay. Okay. So how does the district judge's standing order work when opposing counsel have different priorities in their practice and can't agree on timeliness? There are no deadlines for this negotiation process, right?
There are no deadlines in, say, a scheduling order or anything like that, but what it says is that if you're not able to reach some sort of an agreement, you're supposed to bring a motion before the court.
Why didn't you do that?
Well, we didn't have time. We didn't find out about... I will admit, we made a mistake when we filed the motion for summary judgment initially in this case.
Then you made another mistake when you said the plaintiff had not filed any time, had not served any substantive response on it, right?
Well, we should have put timely in that particular one, but we were dealing with two competing motions for summary judgment with the same plaintiff's attorney that had to be filed on the same day in the Kalin versus Metcalf and Gurney case. That's where the confusion came in, because there had been no substantive statement or addition of facts by the plaintiff in the Metcalf case. Here, plaintiff's counsel had sent us something, but it hadn't been timely.
So do you think the district, given that the plaintiff did serve on you all a pretty detailed response to your proposed statement of undisputed facts, do you think the district court had discretion to disregard the plaintiff's version of the facts?
I do think the district court had discretion to
disregard. For violating what?
Well, this wasn't the first violation of the court's rules.
No. How was this a violation?
How was this a violation? The court had given us the standing orders, had told us to comply with the standing orders.
And you didn't, and she didn't.
Right.
Well, at two different times.
Right.
So when we...
And the response to one was, go and sin no more, and the end of your case for the other one.
Well, that's because on prior occasions, the court had repeatedly warned plaintiff's counsel to comply with district
what
orders.
What had those problems been?
What's that?
What were those earlier problems?
The earlier problems were failure to have communication with counsel before filing motions to compel. And I would point to docket number 68 in the Greer case from June 8th of 21, and docket number 55 in the Metcalf case, also from June 8th of 2021, in which the court said, we have repeatedly warned plaintiff's counsel about the necessity of complying with the court's standing orders, and warned that if this practice continues, there are going to be sanctions or ramifications for continuing to do that. Our first error was when we filed our motion for summary judgment with our statement of undisputed material facts without having tried to work it out with the plaintiff. And the judge struck that and told us to go back and follow the procedures. That was on July 12th. It was 3 weeks later, despite numerous attempts by us to get plaintiff's counsel to...
The ordinary practice in the Northern District of Illinois, I gather there's no default briefing schedule for summary judgment, is there?
Not that I'm aware of. It's generally set by the court, and we have
a 15-day, but most courts set their own schedule.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I'm thinking, your summary judgment motion, in essence, says to the court, look at all the facts, plaintiff can't prove her case, right?
Yes.
So puts all the evidence in the case at issue. A response requires review and digesting of all the evidence in the case, right?
Yes.
15 days is a pretty short deadline for that.
Mm-hmm. And I wasn't aware of a 15-day deadline in this case.
Okay, sorry. Yeah. Or even 3 weeks, right? If you've got other cases.
And if that's the case, plaintiff should have said early on, I'm going to need additional time. I'm not going to be able to get this to you. And let's go in on a motion and ask for more time, or going in on our own and asking for a motion for additional time. Quite frankly, counsel's waived all these arguments because she did not bring them in this case before Judge Ellis in the district court.
And you all then misled the judge, and she seemed to overlook your correction, right?
I disagree with that. We did not intend to mislead or deceive the court. Like I said, we were filing two.
I didn't say you intended to, but you did.
I don't believe the court was misled or deceived at all.
Stephen Kim and Taylor failed to participate in the drafting of a joint statement of undisputed facts. That's from footnote 2.
That
sounds like she was misled. Didn't focus on your correction.
I disagree when we look at how Judge Ellis applied the facts that were presented to her.
If we didn't have the video here, do you agree there would be an issue of fact? If we just had your statement of facts and Ms. Gilbert's statement of facts and no video, do you agree there would have been an issue of fact on the underlying summary judgment?
Without video, we would have had conflicting testimony on what took place out there. But
so yes, you agree there would have been an issue of fact.
I agree because what Judge Ellis did was looked at the video and said that this video utterly discredits the after the fact testimony of.
Now I really need to ask you then, to what part of the body camera evidence do you think Judge Ellis is referring when she said, but the body worn camera disputes their allegations of Timber's playfulness with Greer, and that evidence governs here. Is it your contention that Officer Greer's camera shows the dog acting aggressively?
Yes. I think what Judge Ellis is focusing on in that particular section is it's about 10 seconds between when the dog comes to the door and Officer Greer turns and is trying to do several things to mitigate the situation. He's trying to create distance. He's yelling for them to get the dog. He took out his taser, but he did not have a clear opportunity to use the taser. And then he did what any reasonable officer would do under similar circumstances when being chased by a dog that he has no idea what its intention is and is nipping and lunging at him. He shot the dog to protect himself from serious bodily harm. And
you're going to argue to a jury that any reasonable officer would have done what he did?
I am. I don't think we'll need to, because I think this motion for summary judgment, the finding by Judge Ellis, should be upheld. Because I do believe that Judge Ellis did not abuse her discretion in complying and enforcing her standing orders after they were violated by the plaintiff on multiple occasions.
You can't, the video doesn't show the dog when the officer was running away. The video, I mean, you don't see the dog again until the dog is shot. So there's a chunk of time where the officer's running away, but there's no video to show if Timber was playful or aggressively chasing him. So how can you make a determination as a matter of law on that particular issue?
I see the video, and I see there are periods of time. Granted, the video because
periods of time, but it doesn't capture the entire time.
It doesn't capture the entire time. But I think when you look at the video as a whole, including the statements made by the Kalins after the fact, including the statements made by Ms. McGrilvey, including the entirety of the situation, it does discredit what the Kalins tried to portray happened after the fact in their depositions. And that's why I think Judge Ellis was correct in relying upon the video, in applying Scott v. Harris to this case, and in finding that what Officer Greer did was objectively reasonable under the circumstances.
Mr. Kujawa, I'm interested in your approach to the neighbor's account here. It seems to me that any hearsay objection has been waived, at least for purposes of summary judgment. But is it your view that a witness's opinion about whether a police officer's use of force was reasonable or not is admissible and a sufficient basis for deciding, either granting or denying, summary judgment?
Well, I would break it down into two answers. One, I don't know that what Ms. McGrilvey was opining on when she made her statement was whether or not the officer's use of force was reasonable under the circumstances. I think what Judge Ellis was relying upon and what Ms. McGrilvey was saying was that dog was going to bite him. That dog was nipping and lunging at him. That was not a playful dog. That was a dog that was a danger to Officer Greer. That's exactly how Officer Greer perceived it. And I do agree that the hearsay, objection regarding hearsay was waived. But even if it did, what wasn't waived, I do think it is a present sense impression from
this. It's 20 minutes later, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but I think there is case law out there which talks about the fact that you can still have a present sense impression even with a given some time if you don't have an opportunity to go and try and prepare your answer or change your opinion.
It would be at best debatable.
What's that?
It would be at best debatable.
It certainly would be debatable.
A present sense impression or... But do you think, well, let's suppose that she had said he had no choice but to shoot the dog. Do you think that would be admissible? And do you think if she had said, I can't understand why he shot the dog, would that also be admissible?
I think they both would be admissible.
Oh.
Do you think other police forces want summary judgment to be denied on the basis of eyewitnesses saying the officers were using excessive force? We see a lot of excessive force cases, and witnesses are often upset by what they see that may be perfectly legitimate under the circumstances. Should we reverse those summary judgments based on the eyewitness opinions?
I don't think you should reverse those summary judgment opinions based on those eyewitnesses. I do think that what Ms. McGrovey had to say here regarding her observations of the dog, not necessarily what Officer Greer did, but what the dog did, are relevant and admissible.
And do we know anything at all about the relationship between Janet McGilvery and the Kalins? Do we know anything about that? In other words, are they friends? Do they like it? Do we know anything?
We do not, other than their neighbors. Yes.
Okay. Judge St. Eve, you wanted to ask something.
I'm fine. Thank you, Judge Roepner. Thank you.
Thank you for your time. We'd ask that the ruling of the district court be affirmed. Thank you.
Thank you. All right. Ms. Gilbert,
Janet's testimony.
Wait a minute. All right, go ahead.
Janet's testimony simply goes to the weight of the evidence. The opinion testimony, even if it somehow, I mean, we would submit to you it's an expert opinion testimony and should not be admissible, even if it's not hearsay. But that simply goes to the weight of the evidence. And on summary judgment here, the court cannot credit her testimony versus the three plaintiffs. In other words, the error that was committed on summary judgment was the court gave all this credence to Janet's testimony when the court did not view the evidence in the light most favorable to the plaintiffs. The plaintiffs...
What about Mr. Kalin's statement? What about that? How do you want us to view it? Those statements?
Well, he certainly, it could be, he could be impeached at trial with the prior, an admission of a party opponent that at the time he said that, that it was the right thing. That's an impeachment that in the inference, in the light most favorable to the plaintiffs, every reasonable inference has to be given to the plaintiffs. And sure, the defense could come back in and impeach him. But he said the dog ran because Greer ran. The dog walked to the front door. The dog was friendly, had no history of aggression. It was a mellow dog. He said that on the video right after the shooting. So he says a different thing right after the shooting, that the dog's a mellow dog. He's very surprised. The dog has no history of aggression. Certainly, could he be impeached at trial? Yes. Judge, the way the district court relied on Scott v. Harris was just an abuse of discretion. Scott v. Harris is a pragmatic exception on an interlocutory appeal for a denial of a qualified immunity. The court in Gant held that it was a primaric exception and it's a narrow exception. It shouldn't be applied in all cases. And it shouldn't be applied here in this case because that video does not utterly discredit the plaintiff's version of events. The video, it doesn't show anything. It doesn't show the playfulness versus the not playfulness. It doesn't show if the dog ran because Greer ran, as the plaintiffs allege, or just was going to chase whether Greer ran or not, as the defendants allege. These are questions of fact, which is exactly the reason why the court erred in granting summary judgment in this case, because there was two different sides of facts. The plaintiffs contend Timber never jumped in an attempt to bite or nip at Greer. Greer even said he failed to mention anything about nipping, lunging, growling, or any of the above when he talked to Kim immediately after he shot the dog. He said, "I shot your dog, the dog chased me." Plaintiffs, all three of them, submitted that the dog only went or chased Greer because he ran first. If he would have tried alternative methods, such as standing his ground, yelling at the dog, even arcing his taser, using his baton, using his OC spray, we would not have had a dead dog here today. Additionally, he shot first in an internal investigation after the fact. He admitted he shot first because he didn't want to, and rather than use alternative methods, he said that, "I didn't try alternative methods. I went right to shooting the dog," because he was saying, "I didn't want to be injured and off of work." That was his rationale when he originally spoke to a man. So, Judge, the only solution in this case is to reverse the grant of summary judgment, because there are certainly material disputed issues of fact. The three Kalins versus Defendant Greer and their alleged witness, Janet. Her testimony was never tested. It's questionable she could even see through the trees and the high flowers where he ran. Your Honor, thank you for your time on behalf of the Kalins, and I ask that you reverse summary judgment.
Well, thank you to both attorneys, and the case will be under advisement. We are now going to take a 10-minute break.